So I recently got back from a week-long holiday in Phillip Island, in Cowes, with my family. Over the course of the last year, I think it was around about August, we bought a caravan. We made a big investment in a caravan with a view of having a few holidays as the kids get a bit older and going, travelling to various places in the country. And so our first, I guess, proper holiday, we've had a little weekend away before that, but our first proper holiday was this last week in Cowes and Phillip Island. And I've got to say, it was a great holiday. In fact, it was one of the best holidays that I've had that I can remember. And the reason was is because we made some really good friends. We got to know these people, new friends, and they're wonderful people, and it was great. But you've got to understand that I'm a little bit of an introvert. In fact, I can be quite a lot of an introvert, as much as I feel comfortable talking to a whole lot of people here. Getting to know new people especially can be a bit draining for me, and I tend to shy away from it. That's my natural posture. And when I'm on holidays, this is especially so. I don't want to talk to anyone. I wear my sunglasses, my cap comes down low, and I just sort of give off that posture, I guess, that don't talk to me because I'm not interested. I'm here on a holiday. I want a break. And so that's the sort of person I am. And now two doors up from us where we were camping was this other family. And they were in a tent. And they often sat outside their tent and would just talk to each other and whatever. And my problem was is that whenever I had to go to the toilet, I would have to walk past this particular site in order to get to the toilet. And because I was on holidays and I was, you know, drinking and eating and all that sort of stuff, this was a reasonably frequent occurrence during the day. And so I would have to navigate my way past this family, and they always were up for a chat. And initially I was a bit reluctant and hesitant, and I, you know, nature would call, and I think, oh no, how am I going to do this? I have to walk past this family again, and I'd have to even start factoring in the 25 to 30 minutes it would take to have the conversation in order to get to the toilet. But I grew to quite enjoy these times. I even found myself, I'll just have a bit more water, you know, make up another excuse to wander past. Now, our kids were similar ages, and the kids started getting on really well, and that was good. And so before long, we found ourselves hanging out with them in front of their tent and them with us under our annex of our van. And we spent heaps of time with them over the course of this week, and we found that we had lots with them in common. It was wonderful. They had a faith in Jesus for a start, which was just amazing. And to get to know them and share that was a really beautiful thing. But we discovered that we loved, the four of us, the two couples, Kate and I and them, we loved the game of 500, the card game, 500. And Kate and I used to play that a lot, and then, you know, lots of friends over late nights playing 500 and all of that sort of stuff. But then as kids came along, you know, the 500 had to take a bit of a back step because you're so tired, you know. 8:30, is it bedtime yet? I've got to get to bed. You know, you never had capacity for late nights at 500. But our kids are a bit older now, so we're able to tuck our kids into sleep, and we shared quite a few late nights with them playing 500 and just getting to know each other and sharing life together. It was fantastic, except that Kate got quite frustrated and disappointed because I just kept cleaning up at 500. But we did have a great time. But what was even more astonishing about this connection that we shared with this family is that as we got to know each other, we came to realize that my family, it's my mum's family who grew up in Bendigo, shared a lot in common with the wife of this couple, with her family, who also grew up in Bendigo. In fact, not just that, they grew up in the same street together, and our two mums played together until they were age 7 when her mum moved away. They moved to Ballarat. But before that, our grandparents, our two grandmas, had been best friends in that neighbourhood, and they were playing together regularly, not playing, you know, baking or whatever, doing the stuff you do together, and they were having a great time. But it wasn't just that. They went to the same church together, to Bendigo Baptist Church. And during that time, some 65 years ago, these two families made the decision through their attendance at Bendigo Baptist Church that faith was really important to them. And so 65 years later, 7 great-grandkids of these two Christian ladies are enjoying hanging out together in a caravan park in Phillip Island. God's faithfulness surely does pass through the generations. Today and next Sunday, we're back into Habakkuk. In fact, next Sunday will be the last of our series on Habakkuk. And so far as we've worked through this book, we've followed Habakkuk's journey of faith from his disappointment and anger at God with the might of the Babylonian army that was on its way to destroy Judah and everything in it, God's people facing imminent devastation and destruction. And so Habakkuk in chapters 1 and 2, he's crying out to God. He's raging towards God on behalf of the Israelites. He's pleading for God's rescue, God's redemption, only to discover that Babylon were actually God's instrument of judgment for the Israelites' indifference and unbelief. And so Habakkuk goes on this journey of faith through Habakkuk chapter 1, 2, and now we're in 3. From the crying out, from the pleading, from the raising his fist in anger, to eventually coming to a place of acceptance and embracing what God's plan was. And the passage that we're in today, the same passage that Mark shared from in communion, Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 1 to 2, speaks to Habakkuk embracing God's plan. And it says this, a prayer of Habakkuk the prophet on Shigionoth. Lord, I have heard of your fame. I stand in awe of your deeds, Lord. Repeat them in our day, in our time, make them known. In wrath, remember mercy. Habakkuk recognizes at this point that it's not only God's sovereign right to raise up the Babylonian army as a judgment on his people, but that God was in fact right to do it. And as he contemplates the terrible suffering that the Israelites were about to endure, Habakkuk's mind has gone back here to the stories of long ago, the stories of past generations. Stories he was no doubt told when he was just a young boy of God's rescue of the Israelites from Egypt, of God's provision, of his forgiveness and his grace ongoing throughout the entire history of the Israelite nation. Lord, I have heard of your fame, Habakkuk prays. Habakkuk is leaning back here on the legacy of those who have gone before and of the faithfulness of God that's been revealed through their stories. Last week, Naomi actually asked us to consider the legacy that we are leaving, the legacy of faith that we are leaving at those who follow on from us. And it's something that I want to sit a bit more in today. And it's something that I believe Habakkuk is tapping into here. There's something in this that if we are to embrace, then our children, and perhaps our children's children, will come to discover that same hope that we even in, and especially in, the difficult and the challenges that we face in our world today. Today I want to share how we can tap into God's faithfulness through the generations. I'm talking today to those of us that are parents, to those of us who are grandparents, but not only to them, because the passing on of this legacy of faith, it requires not just Christian parents, not just Christian grandparents, it requires the whole community of believers. From this passage, I can think we can glean three words that will help us to model and live out the hope that we found in Jesus to our kids and our young. The first word is awareness. Habakkuk goes through this journey. He's shouting at God. He's raging at him. He's crying out to God. And now he has a different posture. He's become aware of who God really is. Right at the start, he's praying, Lord, I've heard of your fame. And all through Habakkuk, he's been listening for God's voice. He's saying, God, you're silent. God, I can't hear you. He's been listening, trying to hear God's voice. But now he has heard from God. I can remember when I was much younger, just a few years ago, when I was watching Ernie and Bert on Sesame Street. Did anyone else watch Ernie and Bert on Sesame Street? My favourite Sesame Street characters were Ernie and Bert. Just loved Ernie and Bert. In fact, I had a little Ernie doll when I was 6 years old. Just loved my little Ernie doll. One day his arm came off. It was terrible, but my mum sewed it on. Thank goodness for that. Anyway, Ernie and Bert. This particular episode of Ernie and Bert, I remember, was that Bert was lying in bed and he was trying to get to sleep. But Ernie had left the tap slightly on and it was dripping, and it was really loud dripping. And Bert says, "Ernie, you've left the tap on. Can you do something about that, please?" And so Ernie thinks to himself, and he thinks, "Yes, I can do something about it." And as lovable as Ernie is, he's not the sharpest tool in the shed. And so instead of turning the water tap off, he turns the radio up really loud and the music is playing. Now, Bert can no longer hear the sound of dripping water. But he's got no hope of getting to sleep because the music is so loud, and Bert is frustrated. "Ernie," he says, "can you do something about the music? I can't get to sleep." So Ernie has a bit of a think about it, and he responds to Bert's complaint by putting the vacuum cleaner on so that the vacuum cleaner could drown out the music, which was drowning out the dripping tap. And on it went, Bert getting more and more exasperated at Ernie's attempts to help. At the start of chapter 3 in Habakkuk, he's turned all the noise down here. He's stopped the questioning. He's stopped the doubting. He's allowed himself to be silent, and he's allowed silence to be all around him. And in that place, at that moment, he's able to say, "I have heard. I have heard. I've heard the stories of rescue. I've heard the stories of redemption from long ago. I've heard of God's blessing, God's provision from generation to generation. I have heard." What a difference it makes when we actually are able to hear God. When we stop our loud complaining, when we turn all the noise down around us, whether it's our busyness, whether it's our distractions, whether the demands that are on us are too much, whatever it is, but when we can turn that noise right down, and suddenly we find we're hearing God's voice. What a difference it makes. The first word, awareness. The second word is awe. Awe. In the second part of verse 2, Habakkuk prays, "I stand in awe of your deeds, Lord. I stand in awe of your deeds." Just this last week, the oversight have been working on our annual report. It's annual report time, so if you're a ministry leader in the church, we're getting you all to write annual reports. I know it's a bit of a drain at times, and so to make it easy on our various ministry leaders, we've said no more than 500 words, 250 to 500 words. Keep it short and sweet. Keep it relatively easy because we don't want it to be too much of a burden. But the oversight report, as we've worked through the process of writing it, it's come out at over 2,000 words. You're going to enjoy reading this report, I tell you. It's a good report. And as we've been reflecting on the past 12 months, it's actually amazing. And it requires 2,000 words to encapsulate what God has been doing in this church over the last 12 months. It's perhaps been one of the more fruitful years in our 44-year history as a church. We had over 50 people attend Alpha in first term last year. 50 people learning about and growing closer to Jesus. God blessed this church financially. In fact, we finished the year with a surplus of over $10,000. If you had been here at the start of the year and the first 3 months of the year, you would have heard me and others sharing about a desperate situation that we were getting ourselves in because we were a long way off where we thought we needed to be. But from April onwards, God provided. But not only did he provide from that point, we recovered and we've ended up with a surplus of $10,000. We made significant inroads into the building of the Scouts Hut. New Gisborne Scouts Group have done an amazing job. The funding is now largely in place for us to build that hut, and we're looking forward to seeing that hut built this year, 2020, it's going to be built. Now, there's probably a bit of a misnomer here when we say the word Scouts Hut, because it's actually a shed of some considerable size. It's not really a hut at all, but it's going to be a significant building located subject to planning approvals on the boundary of the church just out that way. We've seen our youth and young adults ministry grow significantly under Naomi's leadership. We've established two new congregations. And all of these different activities have resulted in the number of people that are regularly engaging in a way of discipleship in this church. That has grown by over 20% in just 12 months. 20% of people who weren't a part of this church 12 months ago now are. Our facilities were developed further. We installed the aircon, cost over $20,000, funds that were raised within this congregation. We made a number of changes to our church constitution, which were passed unanimously. We developed a partnership with Second Chance in Bangkok. We saw baptisms. I could go on, but it's been an amazing 12 months. And we should rightly stand in awe of what God has done through this place. I'm actually so grateful for the discipline of having to write a report, because it causes you to stop to reflect on the awesome deeds of God. The awesome deeds that are unfolding in our midst. It's very easy to even miss them if we don't sit down and record them and recognize them. And when we do this, when we pause, when we're silent, when we reflect on all that God has done, our response must simply be that, like Habakkuk, we are left in awe of God. It's so important, I think, that we tell stories of our faith and of God's faithfulness to our young. Because like Habakkuk, these are the stories that they will then lean back on when they are, in fact, facing challenging and difficult times. I remember when I was 6 years old, and my grandpa Bruce happened to be the husband of the grandma that I was telling you about a bit earlier, but Grandpa Bruce got very sick. In fact, he had a major heart attack on the operating table. He was in there to have a relatively minor procedure, and while they were operating on him, he had a major heart attack, and he died three times on the operating theatre, and each time they got him going again. He ended up having a quadruple heart bypass. He was one of the first patients in Victoria to ever have this operation. But during his recovery, he contracted an infection. And as a result of that infection, his organs started packing it in and he was on the brink of death. Quite a few times, my mum was called in to hospital to say goodbye to my grandfather because he was not expected to make it through the night. And as a little six-year-old, I distinctly remember my church at the time, which was Mitcham Baptist Church, praying for my grandfather, praying for his healing. And I remember how God answered those prayers. Grandpa miraculously was able to make a full recovery. He returned to work running his own plumbing and air conditioning business. He was granted another 12 years of life, even outliving my grandma. This story of Grandpa's miraculous healing, of how God answered the prayers of many, was told again and again throughout my childhood. And as a family, we stood in awe of God's goodness. And as I grew up through the various stages into teenage years and then young adults and the various challenges that you have and there's doubts in faith and all of those things that unfold and happen, I never once doubted God's existence. I never doubted that he was real because there'd been stories of faith that had been told. I want to encourage you to be telling those stories to your kids and your grandkids, to the next generation, to be an encouragement to them, to nurture faith in them. The third and final word that I want to highlight from this passage today is action. Action. The end of verse 2, Habakkuk prays, and he prays, "In wrath, remember mercy." And though Habakkuk knows God's judgment is coming upon the Israelites, and though he understands that that judgment is deserved, he pleads for God. He says, "God, be merciful." For months now, our nation has been plunged into a crisis. A long-standing drought has created tinder dry conditions throughout New South Wales, parts of Queensland and Victoria. And for the last few months, large tracts of land have been and continue to be in flames. The devastation is immense. Over 10 million hectares have been burned. Over 1 billion animals have been killed. Over 2,000 homes have been lost. And tragically, 27 people have lost their lives as a result. And the fire season is only half over. Like Habakkuk, we can rightly pray and we should pray, "Lord, have mercy." Tonight at 5 p.m., we're holding a prayer gathering to pray into this bushfire crisis. Anyone is welcome to come. To come and together to cry out for God's mercy on our land. Now, if you have kids, I actually want to encourage you to bring them along. And young people, if you're here today, I want to encourage you to come along tonight. We're going to pray in a way that involves and includes all ages. And so it will be appropriate, whoever you are. But please come along, young people. I think it would be good for you to be there, but it would be so much better for us oldies to have you there at the same time. To see something of faith being passed down generation to generation as we come together to seek God's mercy for our land. I'd like to invite the worship team to come forward. The story of the Israelites and the story of Habakkuk doesn't end in chapter 3. It doesn't end with the Babylonians destroying Judah. It doesn't end with the destruction of Judean property. It doesn't end with the loss of Israelite life. It doesn't end even with the Israelites being taken back into captivity again, into slavery and bondage, just like they were hundreds of years before in Egypt. It doesn't end there for the Israelites. We've got the story of Daniel who came not long after Habakkuk, and we see his interaction with the Babylonian king, King Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar was the king who took Judea, who ransacked it, who took the captives back to Babylon, and here he is interacting with Daniel, and in chapter 4 we read that Nebuchadnezzar himself came down and he bowed his knees in worshiping God. We read it in the story of Nehemiah, who would lead the Israelites from Babylon back to Jerusalem again, and he would rebuild the walls, he would rebuild the city and the temple. We read it in the story of Ezra, as they got the people, Ezra was the priest, and as the people gathered round the temple, and Ezra read out God's word, and they wept, and they repented, and they obeyed again. When Habakkuk prayed, God have mercy, we can see that God did indeed hear that prayer and that he answered that prayer. Because God is not a God who sits back. God is not a God who dispassionately watches it all unfold. No, he is a God of mercy. He is a God of activity and action. He's a God that's interested in the everyday, in our everyday. God's faithfulness, it passes through the generations. Not so much because of what we do or have done, but so much more because of what he's done for us when he hung on the cross, when our sin was washed away. He changed something, he shifted something, and there's a hope that was found. A new life that we've been given, something that we can pass on to our kids in these troubled times. We can say there is hope. If you are here this morning and you have kids and the cry of your heart is that your kids would come to know the hope that you have found, take faith today. God's not given up. Earlier today we sung the song Waymaker. He is a way maker. He's a miracle worker. He's a promise keeper. He's the light in the darkness. My God, that is who you are. Will you stand? And let's declare out loud to our God. And as we do this, let's pray in our hearts for our kids and our young. Let's pray that they would come to know that hope that we have, that saving love and grace that we've found in Jesus, that purpose and that plan that he has for each and everyone. Let's sing Waymaker.